for coming out in what to me is Arctic weather to get here. And I've explored the tunnels now, which is a great experience to get over here. But first, I just want to say that I'm totally delighted to be here. So far, I really love about 90% of everything that I've experienced, and the 10% has to do with car registrations and running lights and other bizarre things that apparently we don't do very well in Texas, and that costs a lot of money to implement here. But I truly am absolutely delighted to be in this fine university and a fine library and in the middle of the cold in a meeting like this, because I love these meetings. It's my experience to have town hall meetings on a regular basis, and it gives me a chance to talk to everybody at the same time, and staff and professional librarians and academic staff and the staff of the library. I have, since the time that I started to work in a library and I got my master's degree in library science when I was only 22. It was ridiculous. I was way too young to be a librarian. But I started to work in a library, and I started to work very closely with staff because I worked behind the scenes. And you always work with a lot of staff then. And since that time, although I've been in administration for a very long time, finding ways that I can deal with staff on a regular basis is incredibly important to me. So this is one of those times when I have a chance not only to see librarians, but staff, and to see everybody together. So I just want to tell you that this whole forum is very much part and parcel of how I do things and how I want to do things. And it works best if you actually ask questions at the end that are significant and important to the community as a whole. And if you're ever shy about doing that and you don't want a question asked in public that's attributed to you, you can always submit it anonymously to someone in the dean's office, and I'll make sure that I address it. So I did just want to say at the very beginning that I am absolutely, totally delighted to be here. And with that, I think that all of you have an agenda here, which is very short today and rather terse. These meetings will tend to go probably anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. Today it'll probably be more on the 45-minute side. And thank you to the folks from McDonald who came all the way out here, hope for maybe only 45 minutes. But I very much appreciate everybody taking the effort to get here. So I'm going to turn it over to Diane for a minute, and we're going to do this little transition in technology so that you can hear, and it's really important.
Great. I think you can hear me. Good. And I think it's being recorded, which is super. Thank you, Colleen. I have the pleasure of just summarizing for all of you some of the highlights that have occurred over the last few months. When Colleen asked me to put together, along with the team, announcements of what had happened since she came on board, 12 days? Are we in day 13? So we thought we'd stretch it out a bit. I know all of you read the faculty or Library Matters, which is a great way to see what's happening with the library and with your colleagues. But I just thought I'd take an opportunity to acknowledge some important milestones here at McGill Library. And first, there was the Quarter Century Club event, gosh, I think it was early December. But subsequently, we recognized the staff who have been with us 35 years, and I wanted to put their names up on the board and make sure they were recognized. I don't know if you're willing to stand up as I say your names, but that helps put a face to the name. I'm sure you're all well known. Jane Akins in Library Technology Services, Elizabeth Dunkley in Collection Services, ILL, Elizabeth Gibson here in Thank you, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Gibson in the Humanities and Social Sciences Library, who I see in the third row. Jody A. Baer from Hustle. Donald Hogan. David Kingsland. Are you here, David, from... No? Are you streaming? I hope he's streaming. Yvonne Maddox, Amin Marani, Gary Tinsky, Kathleen Watt, and Lonnie Weatherby. So congratulations to all of those. The Quarter Century Club, one of the things I love about McGill is the fact that all staff, when they reach the 25-year mark, are acknowledged at a wonderful party, and we had a number of people hit the 25-year. Benedetta Del Balso, Lise Hackett. Who is Lise here? Wonderful. Good. I see a hand. Joan Hobbins, Judith Lindsay, Mary Lorenzo, Stephen Millier, Rowena Oakes, Mark Richard, Lily Ziegel, I'm sure I've said that wrong, and I apologize, and Francisco Uribe. So congratulations to both our 25-year and 35-year, and I think we should acknowledge some of the clap. Well done. We had several retirements, and I see one of our retirees here. That's great. From Josie, who retired from the Schulich Library of Science and Engineering, Hubert D'Souza from Hustle, John Hobbins, who is here, so thank you for joining us, Ron Johnson from Library Technology Services, Yvonne Maddox from Interlibrary Loan, Mi Lang, who just retired from the Mac campus. Have I got that correct? Yes. So we say thank you to them for their long-standing service. And a couple of tenure announcements that you would have seen in Library Matters, Sarah Holder and Chris Lyons both were given tenure just in the end of this past year. So congratulations to you both. Well done. Okay. Well, we have a new hire who some of you have met, Colleen Cook. Welcome. And Heidi Simmons. Heidi, are you here? Oh, too bad, because then you could stand up and people would see a new face. But Heidi just joined us as a library assistant in the Schulich Library of Science and Engineering. So we welcome Heidi. I hope you're watching from your desk. A couple of transfers within the library system. Jim Henderson, is Jim here? Wonderful. Oh, yes, there you are. Great. Has returned to the Life Sciences Library. Patricia Nellison moved from the Schulich Library of Science and Engineering to the Humanities and Social Sciences Library. And Alessandra Scarcia moved upstairs within the Humanities and Social Sciences Library to Rare Books and Special Collections. So congratulations to all on making those moves. We have fairly new regulations for our librarians. And the first cohort of librarians to go through the reappointment process took place this past year, and I'm very pleased to announce that all of the librarians that applied for reappointment were reappointed, and we've listed their names here: Jill Baruff, Heather Kai, Megan Chalou, April Colosimo, Mary Von Cote, Eamon Duffy, Megan Fitzgibbons, Nevenka Kasevich, Catherine Martin, Louise O'Neill, Ruth Songson, Natalie Waters, and Macy Zhang have all been reappointed and are continuing on the tenure track, and we wish them every success. And recent breaking news, we have two librarians going on sabbatical leave this coming year. Both Sarah Holder and Lori Clota will be going on sabbatic leave September 1. So congratulations to our librarians who were reappointed and the others that were granted leave. let me just have two facilities announcements for you. You've been tracking this through our various communication methods, Library Matters and other forum. But the Howard Ross Library of Management, is Brian here today? He's streaming. Hello, Brian. Brian's been leading the team of just fantastic team of people in Howard Ross. The Howard Ross Library of Management is undergoing a complete renovation. And as you know, the second floor is now closed where the library has been located. The team has moved up to a service point on the fourth floor of the Bronfman building and are providing full reference information support, reserve support with the same number of hours of coverage from the fourth floor while the second floor of the Bronfman building is being gutted and rebuilt. So that will be closed for most of 2011, and is expected to reopen in the fall. So meanwhile, I just wanted to express tremendous thanks are you still hearing me? Good. The entire team with Howard Ross. How many of you are here? Maybe you could stand up, because this is really an accomplishment to thank you. Graham Lavender. The collection, the management physical collection, has been moved over to the second floor of the Humanities and Social Sciences Library. So, fourth, thank you. I was mixing up yes. The collection went to a fourth floor, and the service point went to a fourth floor in different buildings. So, very well done, very exciting, and I just wanted to acknowledge that. Last point, with Carol Urban and her group, we have taken advantage of the former audiovisual lending area. If you recall, in the Redpath building, the ICS audiovisual team used to be there. They have cleared out, and they're located at 688 Sherbrooke. And we've taken advantage of that empty space and have converted it into a group study zone for our students to use whenever the Humanities and Social Sciences Library is open. So it's yet another study space. Be wonderful during extended hours to have that additional space on that main floor of the Redpath Library building. So just to let you know final finishing touches are going on, and we expect the doors to be opened no later than Monday. So just a couple of facilities updates, and I'll turn it back to Colleen. I think. Okay. Leave it right there.
Thank you all very much again. And in thinking about what I was going to do for this very first Dean's Corner, and it is very early into my tenure. I mean, at day 12, what can you really know? Not a lot. And so one of my biggest jobs is to find out things as quickly as possible and to facilitate your learning about me. I decided thought a lot and woke up early and thought some more and stared at the walls and decided that there were certain things I was going to tell you about my expectations, my philosophy of librarianship, some of the ways I do things. That's why I'm going to talk a little bit about LibQual, because I think all of y'all know that I was very much involved in that. And so that you can get in my head a little bit, and you don't have to discover things about me on your own while I'm trying to find out about you. So the first thing I'm going to start out and tell you about and talk a little bit about, and this is a little bit formal, it's a little bit formal statement, is my philosophy of librarianship. And I had to just as all of you going through tenure. I have had to do this too many times in my life, is to prepare a statement of philosophy of librarianship when I had to go up for promotion and tenure. And I had to do it 4 times at Texas A&M. You may say, why did you? Actually, it was 3 times. Why did you have to do that? There are only 2 ranks you're promoted to. Well, we were fortunate enough to have a 4th rank. Actually 2 promotions that we had to go through before we got to be the equivalent of a full librarian. So I have done this a lot. And then when I was recruited here, I had to prepare a package for tenure and promotion, both in the libraries as full librarian and for the Faculty of Education in the Department of Information Studies. So I did a statement on librarianship. It's short, but I'm going to go through it so that you understand where I come from. And I thought that that might be part of the easiest way to introduce myself to you. And so I'm going to read this a little bit, so don't get bored. It's only 2 paragraphs. But I talk a little bit about, because I come to the library world from a viewpoint of assessment, how we have assessed libraries through history. And hopefully, in turn, if we are assessing those things that are important to us, the history of assessment in libraries has gone through 3 progressions that we can pretty much identify. The first one is assessing a library as a storehouse. I mean, we've, from 1011, when we first saw this up here, libraries have in the scriptoria and in the medieval monasteries have stored information. Think of the Great Library of Alexandria. I mean, we still do this. We count volumes. We keep volumes. We somehow are caretake them. The second phase is what I would call a service phase, when we thought of librarians not only as storehouses of information, but as providers of service to make that information and to add value. A third phase that I think we're moving into now is how libraries add value to teaching, learning, and discovery through the provision of service. So you've got information in artifacts. Then you've got the recognition that we have to provide a service. And now we're talking about what that service really does. That provision of service enhances teaching, learning, and discovery, because that's what we are. Now, I truly believe, and several of y'all, I wrote this in a letter, but I also have said this in several other forums already. I, in a very fundamental and personal way, feel that libraries are important, that we provide an incredibly important service to humankind because we are the ones who safeguard accumulated knowledge, wisdom, whatever. And I hope that goes back eventually to where I want it to be. That, you know, I, at the risk of sounding sappy, and I know that that can sound sappy, I truly believe this in a fundamental way. When I get up in the morning, I really feel that what I'm going to be doing is, in the end, important. And I truly don't believe that that everybody gets to say that. The librarians have heard me say that before, but I truly do believe that. In that sense, it is up to us. What we do is to teach users to find, analyze critically, and interpret the information that is the accumulated wisdom of humankind so that it doesn't have to be discovered again. I strongly adhere to a service mission in libraries, and I can't emphasize this more. You're going to hear me talk about service a lot. I strongly adhere to a service mission in libraries and believe that as librarians, our job is to deliver to users what they want, when they want it, where and how they want it. They set the agenda. In our contemporary world, a key driver of this is convenience. It is incredibly important If it's hard to do, we don't need to be doing it. We need to find it easier for users to do things because they need to be about teaching, learning, and discovery and not the mechanics of finding information. I believe that it is particularly important for librarians to acquire, organize, and make available special and rare collections because they are what make us distinctive at this point in time when so many research libraries own so much in common. These are not always simply old books. Special collections can be the online record of the human rights movement in Africa, as my colleagues at the University of Texas choose to collect. While much of what we research libraries buy and own and deliver is shared in common, these unique collections under our jurisdiction require distinctive handling and care. Okay, now going back to service quality a little bit, service excellence is the absolute sine qua non of effective librarianship today in my mind. And the value provided by a library is not only the sum of its collections and services. This is where you have to pay attention because this was really hard for me to explain. I truly believe that there's a transcendent value in what a research library provides to the academic enterprise that's not easily measured, although that's what I have spent a lot of my professional career trying to do, but described perhaps best by the narratives of individual teachers, learners, and researchers and the significance of the library to their work. One might recall a particular spot in a library where a dissertation was written. And I've heard users say that when I was doing a lot of research for LibQual. Over and over, people would say, well, I remember this place where I wrote this, and it had this kind of light, and there was this kind of window, and it was everything from something that was a horrible room at MIT to a beautiful space like we have in some of the reading rooms here. They might remember a particular spot, or they might remember a librarian who helped to interpret the precisely needed document at a significant moment. Understanding and working to capitalize upon this transcendent value in libraries for users on their terms encapsulates my philosophy of librarianship. So I wanted to share this with you because, and I can give it to you if you like, and so you can think about it a little bit more. So what I am saying is that I understand that libraries have gone through this series of storehouses of information, providing services to users, then thinking of themselves as service agents, then believing that we need to be a fundamental part of the academic enterprise. But you put all those together, and it's not simply A plus B plus C equals D. It truly is that the greater transcendent whole of librarianship is greater than the sum of its parts. And that's where I come from. So you can see service is incredibly important to me, maintenance of collections. I truly believe that our accumulated record is very important, and that's what we do. So leaving that aside, I'm going to turn a little bit more to more practical things and say a couple of other things about my basic values. I think work should be fun. I think you should enjoy coming to work during the day. I do. And I'd say about 90% of the time. 10% of the time, what I do isn't all that fun. Sometimes more than 10% of the time. But in Psychology 101, I learned, it's also because I was a German major and I liked all these German things, that Freud's definition of mental health was zu arbeiten und zu lieben, and it means to work and to love. And as human beings, a lot of my interaction with you will be in the work sphere, and I hope you're taking care of your private and love sphere. But I truly, human beings are social animals, and we were designed to be getting up in the morning and going to work. I don't know why we do, but we do it. And it's important. And I really want that to be a satisfying experience for all of you, as it is for me. In very practical terms, you get down to management. And one of the management keys, one of the keys to having a good experience at work is if we all communicate. And communicate in, I will insist upon civility, respect, common sense. Try not to be passive aggressive. Sometimes it's hard not to be. I'd really rather hear what's on your mind in a civil way than have to guess what's going on, because I'm really bad at guessing what's going on with people. I will scratch my head a lot and know I'm not getting it. But so if we can have a compact that we will treat each other with respect and civility, then we'll get along. We'll be really a lot better off. My compact with you is to communicate in every which way I possibly can. And when I'm not doing it well, then you need to tell me, because I'll try very hard to figure out a way to do it. And I will always give you as much information as I possibly can until I get my hand slapped by my boss, or until it impacts upon the individual rights of an individual, because I will always respect that individual. I truly believe that as workers in libraries, we bring a value to our enterprise, and we contribute to the enterprise, but we also bring a value to our own growth. And so I will hope to engage all of you in reaching the extent of your talents too. I'm very aware that the most precious commodity in any organization are the human beings that are in the workplace, and they were born with talents and abilities, and it's up to us to try to capitalize upon those as much as possible. And capitalize is a bad word. It sounds too capitalistic or something. I mean, I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. I should have said that in a softer way. Okay, so that gives you some of my value system, some of the ground rules and expectations I'll have for people. And now I'm going to talk a little bit about, if someone can help me get to where I need to be. I'm going to turn to something that's even more, a little bit more nitty-gritty. And I'm going to talk about some LibQual results. Okay, so I've dealt with very philosophical stuff so far, and I know that my reputation is that I do a lot of assessment, a lot of this stuff, and I do, but I don't do it for its own sake. I do it for a very specific purpose. Again, I believe that we're stewards of society's goods, and we spend $35-36 million a year taking care of this stuff, and we need to know what we're all about. So I, with Sarah Holder's help, we put together some things just yesterday about some of the basic information that's coming out of your LibQual scores and LibQual data this year. And I love these. Have you seen these before? Say yes or no. Okay. Of your data. Okay, so let me explain just really fast that this is a quantitative interpretation of qualitative data. This is simply kind of a word count of the comments of undergraduates on your LibQual data this year. And if you simply count how many times the word library appears and you make it big, that's basically what's going on here. And so if you look at this data, you can see undergraduates are thinking of library big time. It's important to them, right? And it's a brand almost, you can think. I mean, it's a brand that's so big it's on a billboard. And study comes out, right? find. Finding's big on their mind. Books, it's interesting. Space here is big. Books, where's books? It's over here. Computers, think. Great, that's the sort of thing I love. Really open. So you can see what's definitely on their minds. Now, contrast that to what's going on with graduate students. You got library again, but you've got space again. These people are actually looking at how we do things because they're talking about great, always good, one, study's important, but books and resources and journals are popping up. And they didn't on the undergraduates as much to the same extent. I just find these things absolutely miraculous because in a quick and dirty analysis, they tell you so much. Contrast that again to faculty. And with faculty, bam, library is really important, but access, research, journals, use, books, electronic. So you can see a whole lot of the differences in our user groups and what's important to them by a really simple, quick and dirty analysis of nothing, of information that was nothing except words thrown into an empty box. A tabula rasa they could put in anything they wanted to. And you can see the hugely, the very, very different contrasting information going on. That's one of the most powerful insights that we got from all of the LiveQual stream of research was that there is no one user group. Our user groups are very different. And the differences are not so much by discipline, but by user group type. Undergraduates, graduate students, and faculty. Just some other information. I'm not going to belabor this stuff. I've got several slides. I took several out that Sarah had given me. But there's a quick and dirty message that's important to take from this. This column, again, this is undergraduates. This column is priorities, which means these are the things that undergraduates thought were the most important things from all of LiveQual stuff. So, and those of you who know LiveQual terminology, these were the highest, these were the questions that had the highest desired means. Okay, so these are what they thought was most important. This column is basically tells you what we did the best. And this is a really simple analysis again. What you want to do the best is what people want the most. And so what you want is a one-to-one correlation or a really high correlation between these. And we don't have it. Now, this isn't unusual. This is typical of what goes on. I mean, this is not unusual at all. But if you can see here, a lot of where you score high is in affective service and what users are typically wanting, undergraduates or space. And here, interestingly, in a stronger way than in a lot of other places, access to information. I'm not going to belabor these. I may go over these pretty fast. I've got several of them. But in the reality of wondering whether you're ever going to get the second column to match the first column, we're in a world where things are very, very difficult to turn around, particularly the infamous question about electronic access for journals. There's no way that you can make people happy enough. So very quickly, what we've got here are trend lines for the Association of Research Libraries, our peer group. This is the desired mean over time. These are all the ARL libraries together, the ones that did the survey in 2002, all the way up till 2010. And it's simply a trend line. How are we getting better? This is the minimum mean. This is the perceived mean. And, of course, this is called the zone of tolerance, and you want the perceived mean to be in between these. I'm assuming all y'all know this. And so this is our peer group. This is basically what's happening over time in ARL libraries. This is the McGill data for perceptions. So this is good, right? It means that we started out here, ARL is here, we were below them. And then the trend line, the slope is up, and we're higher than the average perception of higher mean of ARL libraries in the aggregate. Now the question, the most important question with this is this one of the things that's most important to users? And, you know, I've lived and breathed this, and I can tell that since it's on the scale of 9 to 4, and it's the zone of tolerance is about 6.5 to 8.5, it's pretty important. You know, if it were down here, you'd know it wasn't, if the whole scale were down here, you'd know it wasn't as important. But, so this is the sort of trend line that I'm really interested in. I do a lot of trend lines. If the trend is higher, and it's higher than our peer group, then that's good. Even if we can't accomplish in a pristine world the collection of all those journals, we're getting better. Okay, these are the two things, just for argument's sake, just for information. Giving users individual attention and employees who instill confidence in users are the two things that undergraduates care least about. Just want y'all that to sink in. Okay? That's not intuitive for librarians. Okay? I've got some trend lines for those too, but I'm not going to belabor those. Okay. For graduate students, same analysis. These are the things that are most important to them. You can see they're heavily into collections because of the IC questions. They're make sure you get the stuff to us that you own and make sure that you've got everything in the world. I mean, that's basically what they want. And then these are the things that we scored best on. They're not the same. You know. So you know, what we need to do is, you know, there's a simple message in this. This is where you put your emphasis. Into these over here. Okay, a trend line again. This is a very important question. Making electronic resources accessible from my home or office. Again, you can see ARL libraries 2002. They were barely at minimum with what users really... Again, this is really high. People really want this a lot because this is desired. This is the ARL aggregate, what we're comparing ourselves to. And this is McGill. We're paralleling the ARL community as a whole, and we're getting a lot better, and we're going up, but it would sure be nice to be there. am I losing anybody? I'm about to stop doing graphs because I know it can make people crazy. Okay, I just... Again, the two things that are least important for graduate students are community space. That's odd to me. I'm going to have to understand that. And giving users individual attention. This is a hugely interesting question because around in all LibQual data that I have looked at, this is true. Giving users individual attention comes out as one of the least important priorities to students, both undergraduates and graduate students. And it's going down. It becomes less and less important to users over time. Okay, so let me just go through this really fast just to get through it. Okay, faculty, again, it's all about content and access because that's what the IC things are about. And what we do best is affective service and library is place. This is the great question of the universe. Print and or electronic journal collections I require for my work. We aren't getting any better in the ARL community much, but we aren't where we want to be. And we've got some work to do here. But the trend is up. No, that's what I look at. Because no one is ever going to be here. It's virtually impossible. But if you keep working and working and working, there was obviously someone along in here made a decision. Because if you hadn't made a decision to do this, you wouldn't be here, you would be going down like this. With the rest of this world going up and this resources they've been putting to it, you're this far apart there, you're this far apart there. I mean, that's a success story to me. Not where you want to be, but you're getting there. Okay, this is the website, same deal. Sorry. Where I was in my previous institution, we redid our website every 2.5 years. It's hopeless. Lowest priorities. Sorry, I didn't mean to say it's hope. It's an... It is, let's put it this way, you have incredible job security. Again, faculty, they don't care about group learning because they don't use the library anyway. And library space that inspires study and learning, that's interesting. That's the most important thing for, one of the most important things for undergraduates. Okay. Faculty, interesting question here. That's okay. Okay. So you're going to wonder why I'm turning to this. So this is the last. I'm switching in my talk now because I knew you were beginning to glaze over with graphs, and believe it or not, I had more that I took out. I can do a lot of those. But the most important thing were the trends, the whole idea that there are big divergences in user groups. You can get a lot of good information from both qualitative data and quantitative data. LiveQual is only one way of gathering information. You need to be doing lots of different ways. It is not the be-all, end-all. It does one thing. It allows you to compare yourself against other people. And that's hugely important because we can compare ourselves against other ARL libraries. But it is not the be-all, end-all of assessment. It fits a specific niche. So even though I've been involved with that, does not mean I believe it's the only thing, by any stretch of the imagination. The things I got from just looking at this data really quickly verified in my mind that the user groups here are very similar to user groups in other places in my experience, and that there are big significant differences between user groups here, as has been my experience, but not totally parallel to what I have experienced before. There's something going on with pedagogy here that hasn't emphasized very much group study, I think. And because I'm not seeing that come out here as strongly as I do in other places. And your undergraduates are hugely interested in content in a way that is atypical of other places, too. A little bit atypical. So those are really interesting things for me. I get off to differences. We need to try to map what we do best with what people want the most, recognizing that those trend lines going up are the immediate goals that we want, because we may not be able to just immediately flip a switch and get exactly what our users want. As long as those trend lines are going up, we're doing our jobs well. Okay. So, enough of LiveQual. And I won't talk about LiveQual all the time. As a matter of fact, I'd prefer if somebody else talked about LiveQual. And there are several pretty good experts here. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about me now. Just me. This is a snowy owl. It's a gorgeous bird. I have never seen one of these. The first time, I really want someone to tell me how to see one. Because they're here. And I will be so happy if someone can show me how to see one of these birds. I know about them. And as a matter of fact, I have an obligation to immediately email my best bird-watching friend in Texas the first time I see one. So those are gorgeous birds, and I very much want to see one. And the people recognize where this came from. It's a very famous book, very famous plates. So if anyone here can help me see this bird, I will be quite happy. A little geography. I was born here in Fort Worth. I grew up here where it snows, but it snows horizontally and drifts. So it doesn't snow here. It doesn't snow like it does here. It would snow like for 3 days straight and have 13-foot drifts and be an absolute nightmare. But it did snow, but I never needed a coat and boots like I do here. And then I went to school here at the University of Texas at Austin. But this is where I live. This is the Texas A&M University, which is only 100 miles from Austin. So in this whole gigantic state, which has a few million people fewer than the whole country of Canada, we were educating 100,000 students 100 miles apart, which makes absolutely no sense, right? Because you've got this whole big space. But it was very hot and rainy here and didn't snow. So for the past 30 years, I've lived someplace where it was hot and rainy and hardly ever snowed. And it's interesting living here. So it gives you an idea of where I really came from. Right over here is where the oil spill happened. So that very much affected us. We were worried about the oil coming up here, which would have been really devastating. And it hurt the shrimp population. By the way, don't eat shrimp anywhere except from the Gulf of Mexico. It's the best stuff ever. I do own a pair of these, but mine don't have longhorns on them because being a UT alum, my longhorn would have to be burnt orange. Those are white. Mine aren't quite that gaudy, but they are black and they do look like that. And I do have a pair. They aren't laughing. I asked Marika to find the saddest, sorriest horse she could possibly find, and I thought she had done a spectacular job. And I've actually ridden horses like that. That's a very sad horse. But I have, there are horses like that, and I have ridden them, and I've fallen off of them, actually. But that is what a good horse looks like in Texas, because see how it keeps its head down? The head's down so you can see over it if you're trying to find cattle and stuff. So that was supposed to be a hit, but it wasn't. Okay. I'm beginning to understand. Okay. So anyway, thank you very, very much. And we did find a little martlet that was appropriate. I do know that martlets don't have feet, which I find truly bizarre, but no more bizarre than anything else. So I would be happy to entertain questions on anything and everything and hope that I have at least a couple. Yes.
Thank you for your presentation. First, as a point of information, the reason martlets don't have feet is supposedly to show that they're always in flight, which is supposed to be inspirational, and which
That's
is
right.
very nice.
But I've noticed that most artists have a problem with that, and they kind of have feathers covering up where their feet should be, or they would look really weird. Yeah, I know.
I had a question about the slides which showed the words from the LibQol survey depicted in different sizes at different positions. The size of the type font gave data about the relative importance of the words. I was wondering, did the changing position of the words communicate data about something?
No.
Or was that just artistic?
Size. It's just size. And it's about as easy an analysis as you could make. It simply how many times the word appeared. Yeah, so library appeared the most times, so it's the largest. But it's such a quick and dirty analysis of qualitative data. There are incredibly gruesome ways of analyzing qualitative data, and this one is just so easy and elegant, and it gets you so much information so fast. I love them. Other questions? Thoughts? Okay. Well, with that, there are, I just want to say very quickly that I appreciate everyone who came here. We will be doing this on a regular basis, and sometimes there'll be more nitty-gritty content as I try to figure out how things work here and how communication works. But we will always try to have a presentation or two that's meaningful to the whole community. And just in close, I want to specifically thank Diane and Bruna, who have made my first 12 days so much easier than I can even begin to think that they would have been. And I owe a special debt of gratitude to them. And to Sarah and Marika, who helped me put together this presentation up to about 15 minutes before before it was here. And to my assessment officer in College Station, who doesn't know he's being named, but I was really mad because I couldn't find him for the past hour. And he's used to, you know, I guess he can't be at my beck and call anymore. But his name is Michael Maciel.
Would you want to mention your hours, office hours? I know it's been published, but...
Yeah. I just want to remind people that I do have an office hour, and it is on Mondays at Tuesdays from 3 to 4. And I really like people to show up. I mean, I've always got something else to do, but it's really useful to me, and you can always catch me. Come to the receptions. And just if you want to see how these trend lines work, you know, what I did was take some work that I did at Texas A&M and redo it here in this context. In the Research Libraries Issues, this is the ARL newsletter from August last year. There's an article in here with all this data from where I was before, which shows you how I think and some of the planning tools that we use and we'll be using here. Good. Here.
Can I just talk here?
Oh.
Oh, good. Good. I, when talking about the facilities update and acknowledging all the work done by the Howard Ross Library of Management Group, I also wanted to not forget Francisco Oliva from our Planning and Resources Group for his wonderful project management of all that move. So just I'd forgotten it, and Bruna, thank you for reminding me. And that's it.
That's it. Thank you all very much for coming.